Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah.
This episode of Yes But Why Podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy.
I've always been performing. We didn't even have drama in my school that I went to growing up. Like, we had one drama class my senior year. I don't even know if I took it. I was like founder, president, and probably spotlight stealer of the drama club at my high school. And then, like, I did beauty pageants when I was a kid. I love beauty pageants. My mom is by no means a pageant mom in any way. She was just like, this child wants to do this. And she said from a really young age, you were like, I want to get up on the stage and wear dresses and like do the whole thing. And my mom was like, okay. And, you know, she's like, you just always like marched right out there and did your part. And then when I was like in middle school, I would enter myself in beauty pageants. Like, I'd squirrel away the $75 to get in just so I could do the talent portion of the pageant. And one time I did this weird, well, probably more than one time, but one time that I can remember, I did this weird performance art thing. Like, my sister helped me. It was like interpretive dance meets like original poetry. This is me at 13. So it was probably like,
that's great.
It was probably like epic cringe factor, but I was like, I didn't even care really about winning at that point. I was like, I just want to perform, and like, I know that they're going to give you 5 minutes uninterrupted to do whatever you like during the talent part. Isn't that funny?
What a wild open mic you had found. You're like, they totally let me in the door if I do these other tricks for them, but
yeah,
what I really
$75
want.
Bucks, and if I do all these things, yeah, totally. But like, I get my dresses at Salvation Army. You know, I mean, I was like, not by any means pageant circuit material, but definitely like hungry for the stage. We didn't even have a community theater in my town. Like, I didn't. I mean, obviously, I watched TV and stuff like that, but it was like, I hadn't made the connection that was a world that it was at all possible for me. All I knew was that I loved like people watching me, loved people clapping. You know, I was like, loved performing. So I was just trying to find avenues to do that. And when I was looking through the catalog, like, I'd already been accepted to Winthrop and everything, and I was like, oh, well, I know it's a liberal arts school. I wanted to go to school to be a teacher, and they have a really good teaching program there. And so I'm like looking through the catalog, and it was like, okay, if you're going to be a teacher, here are the different majors that you can add an education degree to. And I was like, theater? Oh, hell yeah. I didn't even know that was something that you could study. that's how that began. And
what
I really was
like,
dude, I didn't get any parts. I mean, I knew nothing. There were like kids in my major that, you know, had these like hardcore, awesome theater programs at their high school. I mean, I was just like backyard plays, invite the neighbors, charge everyone a quarter type situation rolling into my college program. I had like a love for it, and I also had like a gritty, weird, let's do it our way. Why do we have to make the audience one thing and the players the other? Like, I think we're all in this together, kind of like backyard feel that I still certainly have cultivated now in my career in theater. And I had a second semester of my freshman year, I had a professor who was like the cool professor that all the kids were like, I just hope he likes me type deal. He like pulled me aside, and he was like, hey, I don't think this major is for you. Of course, I like start, you know, get all upset and emotional. I'm like, why? And he was like, it just doesn't seem like you take the craft very seriously. And he was like totally right. Like, I definitely didn't take the way it was being like handed out there very seriously, but I have devoted my life to the performing arts. Like, here now, fast forward, and I've had a career as a drama teacher and an actor and a director. Like, I take the craft of telling stories to an audience very seriously.
You know, theater programs in colleges can get pretty full of themselves. I know that my college is very heady when it comes to, you know, representing what is the proper way to do things, right? So, I mean, realistically, now that I'm older and also a theater teacher, I realize it's like, well, that person was just given the ultimate stage, and now they can be like, I'll tell you what theater is. It's this and nothing yeah. else. So realistically, right. that's just what every theater program is. Everyone tries to represent as if they know the one thing and that's it. But unless 100 years after your death, people are still using your method, you're just one of many, unfortunately. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sure, like, Meisner wasn't like, this is working. This is working! You know,
yeah.
later, 100 years later, and people are like, hey, this technique really makes me feel different. And they're like, okay, cool. Everyone's doing it. We're doing it forever. Like, you know.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. You didn't. So did you stick with it or did you change your major?
No, I stuck with it. I became a drama teacher. Yeah. I graduated as a theater major. There were Good. Definitely some like bumps in the road. I don't get to let anybody tell me what to do. That same professor, I just want to quickly tell this story.
Please. Let's push him to the ground. Let's go.
He directed a play my sophomore year, and I went and auditioned for the part, and I crushed the audition. And then he didn't call me back, and he called back people that, like, they didn't even have their monologue memorized, okay? And I, like, went to his office, and I was like, hey, man, like, is this personal? What's going on, dude? And he was like, well, the thing is, like, I feel like you had a really good audition, but I kind of have a feel for you. I think you wouldn't be able to pull off the part. So why call you back? And I was like, oh my God. And I went to the call back anyway. And he was like, this is a ballsy move. And I was like, I just would be so good in this part. And he let me like read and do the whole callback and everything. And then after the callback, he was like, okay, listen, I'm not going to cast you. But I just want you to know, like, well played. You did a great job. And I'm, you know, to be honest with you, the rest of college is a blur. I was just so proud of myself. And I was like, yeah, hell yeah, you know? And honestly, like, I don't really even, I wrote some plays, some probably like angsty, pretty unwatchable stuff. And I directed The Book of Liz by Amy and David Sedaris. Love that show. But other than that, like, I kind of didn't do a whole lot. I did some, but I just sort of stopped auditioning for stuff at that point. And I was like, you know what? Like, that was the beginning. So pretty early on, I was like, I'm going to kind of figure out how to do things my way. And I went with my roommate, and we auditioned for this like improv theater that was starting in Charlotte, North Carolina, Charlotte Comedy Theater. And we both got in, and they were like, the auditions were in like the back of a Cajun restaurant, and it totally smelled like fried shrimp, and we killed it. And that was like such a great experience being a part of that theater and like learning improv. And I was just, I mean, that was the end of it. I threw all my cards in that hat and I was like, yeah, this is where I am. You know,
that's what happens when the theater department, who's a person who's supposed to be a teacher, doesn't want to teach. That's the toughest part about teaching legitimately, is when you get people in your class that you're like, I don't know how to connect with that person, but that's not that person's fault. That's your fault. You have to, as the teacher, have to figure that shit out. Like, it's just such a cop out. And like, this person was a male.
Yeah,
exactly. So I feel similarly that I have lived the kind of life where, you know, you think that you're gonna, you know, you have high hopes for like a group project or everybody helping or like a big thing. And then often I'm just doing stuff by myself. So I totally understand when, you know, people are like, oh, well, you got to do it this way and you're not doing it this way. So, you know, I think it's better, honestly, like to be building stuff on your own and figuring that out. And don't get me wrong, like it's important to know how the, like, you know, other kinds of theaters work. You know, I did a couple internships at some Lort theaters because I was interested in how they run. Do I work at them now? No. Because I learned that I don't like how they run. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, no thanks. But where are all these fancy people going to these fancy theater schools really working? Like, what are they doing? It's just, I don't know. I don't like the snootiness. I've said so much here.
I've worked in the performing arts now for, 16, 17 years. I've been working in the theater industry, and, you know, in one form, like director, actor, coach, writer, like comedian, sketch artist, improviser. And I do feel like my theater major served me well, but it kind of served me in, like, not, like, well, it served me as far as getting a degree and teaching theater. Like, I taught middle and high school as a drama teacher, and that's been awesome. But, like, it really served me in, like, getting on my feet and figuring out what I'm about and what I'm about in terms of this art. You know, kind of what you're talking about right now. Anyway.
So when you started at the improv theater, that's where you put all your energy at that point? And that was Charlotte Comedy Theater, you said?
Yeah. Yeah, in Charlotte, North Carolina. They've been around now for, 16 years. It's 16 or 17 years. And I was, 20. I'm, hanging out with these grown adults. And being a part of this thing getting started. And I loved, the opening and closing night all in one show. This is, a flash in the pan. If you're in the room, you get to see it. And if you're not, oh, well, sensation of, doing it one time, you know? Yeah. I even liked, I don't know. I just kind of enjoyed the whole thing. I even enjoyed, I guess I didn't enjoy this, but I'm also kind of nostalgic about it now, but you know, I got the crap steamrolled out of me pretty regularly by really overbearing personalities on stage. So there was a part of me that really learned how to stick up for myself in a scene and really was no one knows what that feels like. So there's definitely a really compassionate piece in me as a player that really wants to go out of my way to take care of my scene partner. And that's what I teach in my theater now. And your number one job is to take care of your scene partner. That's what it's all for. That's what it's all about, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, whenever I'm teaching, I use that as a way to calm them down. I was like, whenever you're nervous about whatever choices you have to make, stop worrying about what you want and try to figure out what your scene partner wants and just give them that. And don't worry about choices you have to make. They're like, who are they? This guy seems sad. What should I do? Make him more sad, probably? Okay. you know, and it eases you from, that's the other thing when you're doing improv. You should, get up in your head about, oh, God, what decisions am I making? Are they the right decisions? Did I heighten that properly? What was the joke there? Oh, my God, how tight am I doing this? Am I even paying attention right now? What did she just say?
Yeah. Yeah, it's, and you know, a quick way to get yourself out of your head is to make eye contact with your scene partner, listen to what they're saying, and just react to that. I sometimes describe an improv scene like a ping pong match. I'm like, you don't want to go all Forrest Gump playing the wall crazy on that scene. Just hit the ball. You know, when it's your turn, just a little, you're fine. Now let them hit it back to you. Okay, we're good. You know.
Yeah. That's an excellent metaphor. So So once you started at the improv school, that was it? You kind of, you know, took the classes at college but didn't really get too deeply involved in whatever was going on over there? When you graduated, what did you do at that point?
I mean, I was, like, active in my theater department, like, for sure. But, yeah, I definitely, like, my energy was, like, okay, you know, way more interested in, like, comedy and live comedy and improv comedy. And then when I graduated, I taught at a middle school for a couple years, and I kept performing with the improv theater. And the woman who started the theater started it in Charlotte when she moved back home, which she's originally from Charlotte, from Chicago. So she was a Chicago trained improviser. And I was like, Chicago, I'm going to do that, you know? And I actually had a friend who moved up to the city, and I called her spring break of like my second year of teaching. And I was like, hey, what are you doing? Like, I have this whole week off work. I don't have anything to do. And she's like, oh, like, you know, I'm in Chicago, like come up and visit. And I was like, okay, cool. And I got off the phone and like threw a book bag in my sweet Saab, my little red convertible Saab, and like drove overnight from Charlotte to Chicago. And so I was like driving into the city as the sun was coming up on LSD. I wasn't on LSD, but my car was on LSD.
Sure.
Lakeshore Drive. If people listening aren't familiar with Chicago, it's called Lakeshore Drive. And like, yeah. And I just was like, okay, I'm going to move here, you know? And so I like had a really fun visit on that break. And then I went back home and went back to Charlotte and like marched into the principal's office of the school I was working at. And I was like, hey, I'm going to finish out the school year, but then I'm moving to Chicago. So I'm just letting you know? And then, and then that's exactly what I did. Like I packed up a U-Haul, had like $400, drove into the city and got a job working as a host at Second City. So nice. Like the person who cleans up the theater and takes out the trash and watches all the shows, which was really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, dude.
So you got a job there before you even started classes?
Yeah, I got a job within 24 hours of driving my stupid U-Haul into the city. Like, it was so... Dude, it was so serendipitous. Like, there was this... I honestly saw, like, a Craigslist ad. I had applied to, like, 80 places, and they were just the first place to call me back. And I was, like, so green, I didn't even... I mean, I knew they were a comedy theater. I knew they did improv and stuff, but I didn't know the history or... I was just like, yeah, this seems like as good a job as any. Like, I literally have a couple $100 in my checking account. I need something, you know? So, yeah, I was just like, I had angels looking out for me in that regard for sure. yep.
Wow. That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah, dude. Totally.
When you're in the right path, man, things fall into place.
Yep, for sure. And, and I worked my way up through the theater in a way. Like, I did take classes. I went through the conservatory program there. The first show I did was the night staff, who were, like, the bartenders, the servers, and the hosts, like, put together a little improv team. And then one of the main stage actresses directed our improv team, and we did a show upstairs. In like, I know Second City has done a lot of renovations, so I don't know if this theater's still there, but we did a show in the Skybox, and it was like an improv show, and it was, oh my gosh, probably unwatchably awesome. Just so good. And someone from the newspaper came and reviewed our show and was like, that's about what you would expect from the people who serve you nachos and beer. And we were like so stoked about the review. We were like, right? We didn't even say, at least like I was stoked about it. I saved the review. I was like, my first Chicago review. You
know? Oh my God, that's awesome. I hope you have that framed on the wall.
Dude, totally. Yeah, it's funny. But anyway.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So how many, tell me about the program there. What was it like for you? Like, what were you super into? What parts were jazzing you? You seem to be the kind of self-starter producing type. So what did you get into when you were in that particular community?
Well, being in the Chicago improv community was freaking awesome. I was on an all-girl team, an all-lady team, all-female team.
Indeed.
it took me, I had to get there. an all-queen team. and we went to, like, the Del Close Marathon in New York. Like, these ladies invited me onto their team just a couple months after I moved to the city, and they're so awesome. And so that was, like, my first time being on, like, an improv team of my peers, and that experience was really cool. Traveling, going to festival with them was super cool. And then I also produced some of my own shows. I produced a midnight show that was crazy, and I feel like the only requirements were that your material, it was kind of like a variety show. It was like improv, sketch, comedy, variety show, but like, really, the requirement is that if you want to be a part of this show, it needs to be, like, weird. Like, so bizarre. And,
how bizarre?
Like, how bizarre. I'd like, I mean, I don't know, I'm just remembering, like, this one woman who, she's a stand-up comedian. I just saw her Comedy Central special come out. She's a friend of mine. Megan Gailey, there's a quick plug. Hey, Megan. She was at a wedding, and then she came to do her 10-minute stand-up set at this show and brought, like, all of the partiers from the wedding who weren't passed out and a cooler of champagne to, like, the show. And that was, like, so... It was, like, this wedding party, like, filled up the theater. Everyone was... I mean, it was, like, so fun, and then one show, I don't even know what they were doing. They were doing like some kind of like underwater dead pirate situation.
Yes.
Not Pirates of the Caribbean, but something like that. Was that even before Pirates? I don't even know. And they had like silly string and we did an episode where we were like, we had weird themes. Oh, that was the other thing. We had weird themes for the show. One of the themes for the show was like, plane. It was like plane themes, like plane is in like airplane, and it was very weird, like, but wonderful. So that was a lot of fun. And then I also directed a show that I'm thinking about doing a version of it out here at my theater in California. I directed a show called Realities, where we did, it was like an improvised reality show, but the characters would stay the same week to week. Like, I cast the cast, and then the plot would, like, continue week to week. Like, we would do recaps of the week before that night's improvised show. And that was, like, super fun, and that show, like, picked up some steam. It just ran for a summer, and then it started to, like, get really sold out pretty consistently, like, because we just had returning fans that wanted to see, like, how you would binge watch a show. They were like, oh, I want to see what happens, you know? So I did that. And that was, like, pretty early on in moving to Chicago. And then I went through classes at I.O., and I was on a Herald team and on a few other independent teams. I had a writing partner named Colleen Breen, who now owns All Out Comedy Theater in Oakland. Hey, Colleen. and she and I, like, wrote some shows together, and I was on another all-queen sketch team. I just did a ton of stuff. I was on a house team at Second City, and we wrote a show together, and we had, like, a year. The commitment was, like, a year and a half or something. I went through the conservatory program there. I don't know. I'm kind of giving you my whole resume, but...
When you finished Second City and you took classes at IO, is it like assumed that you just start again at the beginning. They don't do like well, you learned a little bit over there, so you get to start at a higher level. There's nothing like that, right?
No, because I mean, you know, that's how they make their money. So it's like everybody comes in at square one. You know,
well, 100%. But I've been on both sides of the argument, and I'm always like, "Hey, man, it's a brand. They got to brand you from the beginning." You know, sorry. Mm-hmm. But I've also had people, you know, really make a solid argument for why they should be the exception, and I was like, "All right, I guess." But
well, I always have something to learn. Like if I were to move, you know, if I were to move to like Iowa City right now, I would probably look up the improv theaters around there, and I would go like take class. I wouldn't call them up and be like, about me. You know, I there's always something to learn. And like, there's definitely from theater to theater, something to learn about how that theater does what they do. You know, what's their process? What's their philosophy? And my experience here, having run my own theater now for a couple of years, has been we're batting at 100% average. When someone contacts me and is like, here's all the reasons why I should skip level one, and I do skip them, which I have completely stopped doing, then they end up in level two and are just like, what the fuck is this? You know? And yeah. I'm like, well, even if you've had 10 years of experience somewhere else, like I have my own style and I've like built my theater, and it's this conglomeration of like philosophies and forms and ideas. And this is kind of like how we do things. And I think it's important to like get in on the ground level and like learn right along with everyone else. And you're never like too good to learn something. I mean, the minute you think that, probably go take a level one improv class. If you ever think you're too good, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. No, I totally agree. I'm all for learning all the time, you know. Even now, I've been teaching a long time, and I'm like, I need to take a class. I need to learn some more stuff, you know. Like it's always important to infuse yourself with as much learning as you possibly can.
Dude, totally. I'm such a dork when I go to improv festivals or even when I travel to other cities. I'm like, do they have a drop-in class? I mean, I'm just like a nerd ball for it, you know? And I love taking all the workshops I can at festivals. I love learning from you know, it's an evolving art form. It's an art form that evolved out of practicing a different art form. So, like, it's in constant motion, and it's beautiful. And, yeah, and there's always something to be learned from it, you know? Anyway.
Yeah, I think improv is kind of like a religion. Because we're not very religious anymore, or a lot of people aren't, and they're still seeking community, and improv has served to provide that in a lot of cities.
Dude, yeah, the community here is amazing. It makes me happy all the time. I feel like attracts like. So sometimes I look around at the people who are in my theater and I'm like, oh my God, like they're just the most lovable, funny, easygoing, chill, like would drop whatever they're doing to come help you out with whatever you need kind of people, you know? And it's just really like the community here is amazing. And I'm so grateful to be a part of it. And I feel that too. I mean, honestly, like I live in San Luis Obispo, California now. And when I moved out here, I'd like moved out of Chicago, kind of traveled around and did some traveling for a little bit around the country. And like, you know, went back to that theater I was talking about in North Carolina, taught at my friend's theater for a little while and took some other gigs. And then I kind of like meandered out here to California and landed in San Luis Obispo. And was like here for a year. I did a community theater play. I was teaching drama. I was like, I miss improv. So I'm like, how do I meet other improvisers? There's not really a comedy scene whatsoever happening here. And there were like two open mics or something. And I was like, there was no improv to be had. So I just like offered a class. I rented a studio and taught a class because my thinking was this will be a beacon that will attract the people that I want to hang out with here, like the people I want to hang out with would come take an improv class. And yeah, now like 2.5 years later, we're rolling like 80 deep, you know, we have like a really big community. It's like very vibrant, like very involved. And they are all the people I want to hang out with, like, which is so cool because I do hang out with them a lot. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. How many years you been doing it, you said?
Like a little over 2 years.
That's so great. That's so awesome.
Yeah, dude.
Are you continuously renting the same space? Is there like a home base that you get to have?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I'm actively working on opening like a brick and mortar theater space. I mean, right now I pretty much rent like, oh yeah, it's fun. It's terrifying. It feels super adulty. But I'm doing it. I like right now we kind of bounce around town like a band, you know, venues will hire us to come do shows there or I'll rent the venue and sell tickets. And then I also rent like studio space that I teach out of. Yeah, I'm working on opening our own theater space. So I'm hoping I get that done pretty soon. It's just like crazy. Like what's involved in doing that is kind of, it feels paralyzing sometimes. Like there's so much, I just sort of shut down about it, you know?
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. It can be hard to like, the trouble is that people are always like real estate is such a weird thing, especially in, I don't know, different towns have different vibes when it comes to like giving up space. Right. So I've talked to people all over the country and in different countries and I'll hear different stories about, you know, just in general, like what it takes to get a space. And I'm like, wow, like, I don't know. Every city's different. There's a different vibe, you know, and yeah. I always wonder what the town wants to spend their real estate money on, because I'm like, I don't see how the arts could ever be a bad thing. But, you know,
some
spaces, some towns just aren't into having that kind of thing. What's the real estate situation in your town? Like, are there a lot of shops or condos? What's the neighborhood like?
Yeah, totally. So slow. Like San Luis Obispo, everybody calls it slow around here. We have like a really cute downtown corridor, you know, it's like very pleasant. We're like a very touristy town. We're Central Coast, California. So we're right on the coast and we're like 2 hours north of Santa Barbara. So it's like 4 hours north of LA. So we get like people up from LA for a long weekend and we get like people down from San Francisco. And just like a lot of tourist traffic comes through the town. So like there's that piece of it. And then also, this area is pretty fortunate with the amount of talent in the area. There's a lot of talented people that live here and an appreciation for the arts. For sure, I feel that.
Yeah, but also, it's like, great really, you got a solid community.
Yeah, totally. Oh my gosh, I'm so grateful. And like, it built very quickly, and I was like having fun building the community, so it didn't feel like, you know, I was building this community while I was working full time as a drama teacher, which was like insane. But anyway, yeah, totally crazy. But yeah, I mean, so those are all like a lot of the plus sides of what's going on here. And then kind of a downside is like, you know, California building code is challenging and finding a space that I could use as a theater venue is hard, like something that the city would approve the use for it, you know?
Totally.
There's just a lot of hoops to jump through, I guess. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm not even aware of the hoop until someone's like, hey, you can't jump through that. And I'm like, all right. Oh, well, I didn't even know that was a thing, but okay. You know?
Yeah. Some things that I've learned over the years is that there is city code that is enforced and then there is city code that is not. So
yeah,
there's a couple of things that I'm like, yeah, I feel like everyone's just agreed we're going to break these rules and no one's going to have a problem with it. But
right.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. There's some really important things. Like, for instance, in Austin, oak trees are a big deal. And there are a number of oak trees planted on the sides of the city streets that are apparently historical and protected. And there is one oak tree that is located in obscuring the sign of the theater where I do most of my, shows and stuff. And we have asked the city if there's any way they could, you know, cut it back a little bit so that from the street you could see our sign. And they're like, no. Cool. Sweet.
Dude, I bet you could get out there and give it a little haircut.
Oh. Yeah. Texas and their trees, it's a big deal. I wouldn't want to go to jail for that. No way. There are legitimately guys who come by, girls too. I don't know whose job it is, but there's human beings whose job is to go by every one of the oak trees and move this laser around so that the birds and the bats don't stay in the trees and mess up the beauty of the oak trees.
What?
Yeah.
That seems like a greater environmental issue than the tree.
Yeah.
Like, okay. All right.
So funny. That's it. Like, every city's got some shit that they're like, this is real important to us, guys. Better make sure you protect your trees. You're like, all right, whatever. Every town ever. You know, I'm originally from Boston. In Boston, they love the mob and digging underground. Those are their things.
All right.
So are you still a full-time drama teaching, like in a high school or middle school somewhere?
No, I'm pleased to report I work for myself now. And the theater is doing well enough that it's bringing in enough income to keep itself, like, feel good. Like, so the business is doing well enough for itself to, like, be doing all right. And then the business is doing well enough for itself to support me part-time income. So I, half of my, what I want to make for my way that I live my life income comes from the comedy theater, from like teaching classes and stuff like that. And then I also have teachers that take on classes. So I have instructors. And then the other half of my income right now comes from like other work that I do. So that's like corporate events, and I do like workplace training, like using improv for training in the workplace. And then I also do some coaching and consulting work, and you know, I just kind of have like fun patching together gigs and stuff like that.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. Wonderful. So you're instead of helping middle school and high school students figure out how to speak to each other with Shakespeare, you are helping adults be adults. That's helpful.
Oh my gosh. I feel you on that. I'm really enjoying it. Like, I tell people, like, I work with kids of all ages because I'm like, that's what we are, you know? And when you come together to improvise, you're like coming together to play. Like, we even are going to call you a player. We're going to say, okay, players, are you ready? And so you're playing, and so I'm like, well, I'm still teaching kids, you know, they just come in bigger packages. And I had like a really had a really surreal but awesome moment in August, and it was actually like the week that the kids went back to school. That weekend we do playoffs, which are like short form competition shows. Like, I divide people in the theater up into these small teams, and then they get like super into like name, theme, or like they take themselves like really get really into it. And then we do like this bracket style competition. And so we were like, it was closing night of our playoffs this past year. We'd like do that for our anniversary month. And it was like right after the show and everybody was feeling good and I got everyone t-shirts and we're all like celebrating, partying dork style, you know, improv dork style. We're like having a little spontaneous dance party. and like everyone was in a circle and they were like clapping and cheering. And like the people who were dancing in the middle of the circle were like so dang goofy and just like being so like squirrely. And I was like reminded of my high school drama students. And like, that's what they would do after their shows, like after their plays, they would come back in the theater and like stand in a circle and like go crazy, like dance party and just be like really goofy. And I was like, oh my gosh, like these are still drama kids. They're just in bigger packages. Like I'm still a drama teacher. I'm just doing it through improv classes right now, you know?
That's my favorite part about doing theater for my life is that I feel like I'm getting away with something. Like the rest of the world is like they're having their boring lives and their boring jobs. Somehow I slipped in and was like, P.S. guys, I'm going to have a fun life. And they're like, okay, whatever. And then I did it. And it was like, shh, don't tell anyone.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like the beauty of this is that, you know, we get to give joy back. You know, we get to help people find their joy again. And there's so much that's trying to take away that joy. And so many ways in which, you know, we're putting up walls around each other that it's so nice to connect. So nice to connect with human beings and just be like, let's have some fun.
Yeah, totally. And like, and be a part of a community that just values honesty. Like, I mean, that's what I feel. Like, I feel like honesty in your improv scenes is beautiful. And like, what a fun, hilarious, very public place to practice like this artful skill of connecting and like being totally honest. And then what a silly way to do it. Like, I mean, whatever, you're like playing this like talking bear that's scared of showers, but you're like revealing these like things about yourself, you know, it's very cathartic. I don't know. That's nice. I just made that up, but I'm going to have to go write it because that is a good example.
That sounds good. Take it. Absolutely. It'd be really funny if it's like a 3-act show by the time this airs. And then it's like, turns out it's a hit.
That's where the bear show started, dude. Cool.
The deep cuts. It's all good. Oh, man, they figured it out on the show. I can't tell you the number of, like, ideas I've pitched on this show and never done anything with. I hope someone, a listener, legitimately uses them. I don't use any of them. I think of these, the ones I'm going to use, I don't say out loud on the podcast. Come on, Sabrina, you know what I'm talking about. But I do love just sort of like letting the brainstorming part of my brain go when I'm talking to people on the podcast. Mm-hmm. I find these episodes are kind of like little improv scenes, you know what I mean? Like I get to have a short-term experience with another person and then it's like, okay, it's gone. But instead I post the evidence of it. But I still think it's beautiful because it's this like moment in time between two humans who are opening themselves up for this moment, because like we're strangers to each other, yet we are able to, you know, find the common ground between us and try to talk a little bit about, you know, our lives and our search for success and just mm-hmm. how to live doing what we really want to do.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel that. I'm like 4 hours north of LA and we took a field trip down to LA and took a workshop with Jason Schatz, who's amazing. He's one of the best teachers I've ever had. And over the course of that workshop, he kept directing us back to like connecting in truth with your scene partner and like relating to your scene partner above all else. And he was like, after you've done that, you can kind of like go off and do your kooky thing. But really, like, you know, the connection is the piece, you know, relating, like getting there. I thought that was cool.
I think that's so important because I feel like there's a lot of people who can't connect,
yeah,
who like have such a hard time. And like, I'm like you, I've been singing and dancing in front of crowds from the very beginning. I didn't do beauty pageants. My mom was very political. I just did song and dance numbers on the picket line. But same in that there's a certain level of sort of inherent confidence that comes with that kind of personality. I'm definitely mm-hmm. not an introvert, right? And when I meet people who, you know, I'm teaching or who are in the community, it is one of the most interesting and wild experiences to really try to understand where they're coming from. Because I've advised people for years, you know, about where they should go in their careers and like what they should do next and like, you know, coach troops and stuff. And sometimes mm-hmm. it's like, oh, you guys are just, you're different from me. You're all starting from introvert. And then we have to turn that around and perform with it. So it's just such a like fascinating thing, the way each one of us just are who we are and are just trying to express who we are. And if we like give each other a little bit of room to do it, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, it's just something beautiful about it.
I feel that. And I also want to say like how beautiful it is to show up as you, yourself, and be like, this is me. And it's like very inspiring. And then other people see it and they're like, oh, I can show up as this is me. And that's like the first step in like, you know, it seems like counterintuitive, but I believe that I have to show up as my like self and be like, hey guys, this is me. This is what's up. This is who I am and what I'm about. And then for in order for people to see me, it's like so often people wait until they feel like they've been seen before they'll show you their true selves. And I'm like, well, you're going to be waiting forever at that point, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. I was thinking that similar thought, but with a much more negative bent. So I like your swing on it. I'm all like, yeah, sometimes you got to do it yourself. No one's going to help you. And I was like, oh no, it's better what you've said.
Oh my God. You know what? I didn't even hear. I like am so listening with my filter, which I think is a whole other rabbit hole to go down. But I didn't even hear it. I didn't even hear it that way. I was like, oh yeah, she's feeling me. That's funny.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's purely, I've just, you know, there's working with other people can be a joy and can be a curse. So, you know, I just personally put my color on it. You were lovely. It is pretty wonderful to be able to do what you feel that you were meant to do. Are you, mm-hmm. do you feel like now that you've started running this theater, is this something that you were always meant to do? Do you think some of the adversity that you encountered in college, you know, sort of forcing you to do stuff on your own was to help you build the skills you needed to get to do what you really wanted to do, which is start this theater?
Yeah, I do. And I mean, we kind of like used an example and sort of laughed at it from college. But, you know, I started performing comedy when I was like barely 19. I was still a teenager. And so there's just like a slew of like weird, awful, sad, scary, bizarre, disturbing, off-putting things that I've like seen and heard have been done to and around me up to this point. And what it's created is like, it's created this woman who's like, you know what, I'm going to run a comedy theater differently. I've seen what that does and I don't want to be a part of that. And I do love, I do love the art. I love the craft. I'm like devoted to it. You know, I love what it does for people. I love what it gives me. I love the kind of community I've built. And I'm very like mama bear about my community, you know, like pretty protective of it. And so, yeah, I'm just going to do things differently than they've. It's just because it's a comedy club. It doesn't mean it has to have that like nasty, misogynistic, like vibe that you get, you know, a lot of places. So we just don't have that. We don't have a lot of competition. And I mean, I'm the boss lady. Like, I think it does start at the top. That philosophy and that like approach. And I just don't stand for it, basically.
It's like the honesty you were talking about. If you start being honest from the beginning, like if you're honest all the time, you have nothing to hide.
Like, yeah, totally.
You can be, you know, if you're always honest with people, if somebody's creepy and you're like, hey, dude, you're creepy. Don't be creepy.
Mm-hmm. Because
the first step to stopping creepy is to stop it immediately. If it's two or three times, that's when it gets terrible. But the first time, you're like, yo, Tom, no one says that. That's a terrible thing that no human should say. And then he's sorry. You're right. I shouldn't say that. And you're like, cool. Expressing how I feel, man. And he's like, I dig it.
Yeah.
I mean, because sometimes we're not all really trying to be dicks. It just sort of happens sometimes. I catch myself doing it.
Yeah, I totally feel you on that. And I also feel like people come into a comedy class and they have like an idea in their head what comedy is. And you're like, no, dude, here's what's up. Like Dave Chappelle can say what you just said and he can do it because he's Dave Chappelle. And he's like been at this for, you know, longer than you've been alive or whatever. And also because of who he is and the life experience he's had, and because he's able to like take what you just said and package it up in a way that isn't like horrifically offensive. So, you know, I guess like there's been a few times where we've like those conversations have come up and the environment is like, I mean, very, you know, I like to look at the person behind the thing that's been done and be like, or said, you know, and be like, okay, like, let's kind of figure out where that's coming from. And we, like, nothing like crazy burgers come up. It's just been like a few little things will come up in scenes, like in rehearsal, or for the most part, it's happening in that intro class. Again, why everyone's got to go through the ground level. Just go through intro and then you'll be like, okay, that's how this theater works, you know? Like, we don't do the sex jokes. We don't do the racial stuff. Like, we just, like, yeah, I mean, we don't really bug with that kind of thing, you know? And, like, anyway.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. If you nip it in the bud early, it's not, it can't, it won't become anything too wild and crazy. But it's good that you're building your community to be, an open, community that seems to care about each other. It's really wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm feeling that. It is wonderful. It's really cool.
Tell me a little bit about your podcast, the Ignite Her Fire podcast. How'd you get into doing that?
Yeah, so we've been releasing content for a year and a half. The podcast is called Ignite Her Fire, and my co-host is Shauna. Shauna and I host it together. Shauna teaches twerk shops, and she owns Booty School, Ignite Booty School. So I say all of that because we're both like super fun personalities, you know, and we interview people who are like living life on their own terms. Primarily the people we interview are women, who are doing it their way, paving their own way. We interview a lot of performers, and a lot of business owners also, like small business owners. So anyway, yeah, that's been a lot of fun. Like, I just love podcasts and I wanted to do one. And my friend was like, oh, I want to do a podcast. So I was like, let's do one together. And she has the technical know-how. And then I just show up and make silly jokes.
Were they both of your ideas together to interview inspiring women?
Yeah, we wanted to create a podcast that we wanted to listen to. That was really like where that came from. You know, we're like, oh, we can't find exactly what we're looking for, so let's just make it.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. That's great. That's wonderful. I'm so glad that it seems really fun, and it's a great resource, especially for women who, you know, might not have any, you know, female leaders in their life. If you don't have a role model, somebody who you can compare in your actual life, you know, because everywhere, you know, the 50 states are so different all over the place. Who knows? Yep. And I've even met women being given chances who felt like they weren't being given chances. So I'm like, okay, well then seek out somewhere outside of where you're currently looking for somebody who can empower you. Because there are amazing people all across the world, and whomever it might be, you never know who it might be, who's going to be the one that really inspires you. So it's great to be able to listen to all the interviews that you have on there.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It's been a really fun process. Like, I mean, you have podcasts, you know, it's cool to like talk to different people and find out a little bit more about them. And we've talked a lot about connection on this call, like to be able to connect with people and share their story. Like, that's been really neat.
Yeah. Plus you can connect with a larger audience where the internet reaches, you know, all over the world. Totally. People can find out, hey, in this part of the world, you can do this kind of thing. I mean, I'm just always fascinated. I've talked to people in all sorts of, all different states and countries, and just to find out the hard work a lot of people are putting into the performances. Most of the people, and I'm not trying to look for them this way, but so many people that I talk to are, you know, creating their own stuff because walls were put around doing it in any sort of like quote unquote regular way. Like, okay, well, somehow they wouldn't let me do this. So now I was like, too bad. I'm still going to do it. It's like people are who they are and they're going to keep doing it. So just try to support each other, everyone, because they're not going to stop.
Dude, totally. And there's always going to be a million good reasons to not do the thing that you were put on the planet to do. I'm not even calling them excuses, because if I call them excuses, people get all butthurt and weird and be like, that's not an excuse. It's a legitimate reason. I'm like, there's a million reasons, you know, to not do the thing that you were put on the planet to do. And like, you can always cook up a reason, or you can, I don't know, go start doing the thing. Instead of like, once I have this paid off, I'll do it. Or once I do this, I'll do it. Like, that's a great way to be on your deathbed going, why didn't I do it? You know, anyway, go do it. That's all I'm saying.
Go do it. Yes.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.